this. Tell me, what am I to do? Maybe you should do it too. Tell me why they're sleeping alone. No house, nowhere to call your home. Tell me what I'm meant to see. Won't you stop preaching at me?
Alright, Amy, we won't tell you that it's over, that is. Ah, it's Saturday, the 7th of September, 2019. And you're listening to Southside Broadcasting, Channel 1 for Hospedia. A very good morning to you. And it's time for another Saturday special, which will be focusing a tribute to the late great script editor and writer Terrence Dix. And a newbie in the studio. For whom it's definitely not over, it's a hearty welcome to Dilbog. How are you, Dilbog?
Hi there.
Excellent. Now, you're from Gisborough.
Yes.
But you're also a student at the University of Lincoln.
Yes.
Known well to many listeners of this particular station and so on and so forth. And what, pray tell, are you doing with us today, Dilbog?
Today I'm doing some work experience, learning on the job.
Well, there we are, doing a bit of co-presenting, working through various other processes, looking up the joys of CaldorCity.com. It's all fantastic. I'm going to be asking you for, do you have any favourite musical choices at all?
Musicals?
Any musical, or any indeed singers or songwriters or artists that that Mr. Computer might be able to develop? Could be a clue. We're going to leave that to a Dilbog to think about as the whole thing proceeds. Meanwhile, here's Annie Lennox.
Connection, a form of chemical reaction. says drugs affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245
grams of magnesium, 1 tablespoon.
Remember, any more than 1 tablespoon could kill you. Any less than 1 tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
the recipe?
That's the recipe. Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Come here,
Rihanna and Rude Boy. The choice of Dilbarg. Why Dilbarg?
I just love Rihanna.
And not Rude Boys that are actually around. Just step away, you rude boy. Nasty person from that point of view. Could be referring to the Prime Minister. No, don't go there. It's too early on a Saturday morning. Let's just step aside from that point of view. You were sharing with us, Dilbarg, whilst listening to the music there, simultaneously, because as a woman you can obviously sort of multitask that, you're quite a fan of Bollywood movies, and you're in a Bollywood mood, really. So forget the Marvel summer, the Walt Disney summer, forget the Dumbos, the Pinocchios, the Lion Kings, you know, all of those sort of scenarios. No, you've been going down the Bollywood route.
Yes.
Second only to, of course, Hollywood, hence the reason of its name, in terms of huge popularity. Have you always been a Bollywood fan? Is it the musical aspect of that that sort of appeals, or is it a case of, I don't know?
I've just grown up watching Bollywood films and watching Bollywood soap operas, so...
Right.
Just got a close connection with those.
Well, clearly, exactly. It's an intriguing one. I mean, certainly I've known a number of people. MJ Simpson, for instance, a very keen writer for various science fiction areas and back in the day, who was a huge Bollywood fan. I think he had done a whole range of things. He was based in Leicester and was doing a whole study of the whole field. But and, of course, for those people who haven't heard of Bollywood, it's pretty much the cinema of India, isn't it, really?
Yep, it's the movie industry in India.
So, favourite stars?
Favourite stars. my favourite woman crush, literally since I was a child, was Kareena Kapoor and Amir Khan. They're my two favourites.
Okay. Not related to the Prime Minister or President Khan? I'm Imran Khan. No.
Yeah, he is. Imran Khan, the ex-cricket player in Pakistan.
There we are. Or it was Captain James C. Cook, what I said, obviously. Khan!
Feeling we were willing.
It's all gone very quiet now. Ashford and Simpson, solid like a rock. I remind you, you're listening to Southside Broadcasting at Channel 1 Fast Media. And don't forget, you can also access us 24-7 by simply going to southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. That's southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Facebook us, of course, facebook.com/Southside Broadcasting. Twitter, just twitter.com/SouthsideBroadSea. That's @SouthsideBroadSea. And yeah, I think there's an Instagram thing that we're working through as well from that point of view. So it's all good. And if you want to get in touch with us directly, either do as Dilbarg actually did. You use the traditional method of the telephone. I know, shocking. Use the telephone. Dial up 01642 854742. That's 01642 854742. And leave a message and we'll get back to you as soon as possible, which is Dilbarg will count. It's pretty much. We do get back to people when they leave messages and so on. So that's the whole thing. She's nodding. Always good for radio. Brilliant. And on from there, just a reminder that there are lots of podcasts and other things that you can access us, all part of the Southside family. Even when, if you're listening to us live this Saturday morning in James Cook University Hospital, you leave and so on. Heaps of good stuff there on Southside Broadcasting, your healthy alternative for the discerning listener. In the sand. Speaking of which, you're based in Gisborough, Dilbarg. Do you ever get down to Saltburn or Redcar or any of those?
I went to Red
exotic
Car.
Places.
I went to Red Car a couple of days ago, actually. Mm-hmm. Had a lovely... We went to the arcade and played some games there.
Mm-hmm. I always think Red Car could do with a lick of paint. That's just a personal thing, though. I don't take it just personally. It just needs... Saltburn, I tend to prefer. We do a lot of... Once I actually did an eight-hour non-stop radio programme in the Saltburn funicular lift, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, there we are. Even got Radio 2 presenter, now his own soul, Chris Evans, actually sort of gave me good luck wishes from that point of view. Thank you, Chris. Look what happened to our career since then. Okay, in a few moments' time, we'll be talking, all being well, to Alan Stevens, of course, the founder, co-founder of Caldor City, a series of audio plays which used elements from the fictional universes of British TV series Doctor Who. Dealbag, start watching after David Tennant. Don't worry. And indeed, Blake Seven. She'll never have heard of Blake Seven. But more sort of aspects will be coming through with that. And as mentioned, of course, Terence Dick sadly passed away. Earlier in this week, we were actually at Great Yarmouth with Sam Stone and David J. Howe. And we did a little feature then on Terence Dick's. You can listen to that, obviously, online via podcast. Meanwhile, here come the Black Eyed Peas.
I spend my time just thinking about you. Every single day, guess I'm really missing you. And all those things we used to do. Hey girl, what's up? It used to be just me and you.
I spend my time just thinking about you. Every single day, guess I'm really missing you. And all those things we used to do. Hey girl, what's up, yo? What's up, what's up, what's up?
Can you meet me halfway? Right up the borderline is where I'm going away. For you, I'll be looking out. Night and day. Took my heart to the limit, and this is where I'll stay. I can't go any further than this. I want you so bad, my only wish.
Girl, I travel around the world and even sail the seven seas. Across the universe and go to other galaxies. Just tell me where to go, just tell me where you wanna meet. I navigate myself to take me where you be. Cause girl, I want you right now. I travel like temp, I travel downtown. Wanna have you around, like every single day. I love you always,
can
I'll meet you
halfway. Right at the borderline is where I'm going away. For you, I'll be looking out. Night and day. Took my heart to the limit, and this is where I'll stay. I can't go any further than this. I want you so bad, my only wish.
makes sense, really. Possible negotiations with whomever. Meet you halfway. Fergie and Will.i.am and the Black Eyed Peas. Are you a Black Eyed Peas fan at all, Dilbert?
I used to love them as a kid.
Aww, they don't go away. You know, always work our way through that process. Very important. Upcoming, as we mentioned, Alan Stevens will be chatting with us, and exciting things will be manifest from that point of view. Chris Martin and Coldplay, your thoughts?
Coldplay? They're okay.
They're okay, yeah. Okay, well, here we are. Nice theme for, presumably, Jacob Rees-Mogg.
And presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
That's Lily Holloman affecting an accent.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialize in online radio and press for independent bands. with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Sir Paul McCartney, and Wings, Band on the Run. Okay, we are now literally a matter of moments away before hopefully Alan Stevens will be gracing us once again with his Saturday morning presence entertaining a whole variety of other bits and pieces. Other treats we can look forward to in upcoming weeks, of course, as well as more Fly Me to the Moon podcasts. We've also got on Wednesday, Dean Friedman is coming back to actually join us from New York City, ace musician and singer-songwriter. And even Kid Creole and his Coconuts will be returning. Kid Creole, currently in Sweden, originally from the States, but doing all sorts of other bits and pieces. We've also discovered from the Dilbag analysis that we've been running this morning that Dilbag actually is quite a fan of Ant-Man.
Would you dance if I asked you to dance? Or would you run and never look back? Would you cry if you saw me crying? And would you save my soul tonight? Would you tremble if I touched your lips? Would you laugh? Oh, please tell me this. Now would you die for the one you love? Hold me in your arms tonight. I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. I will stand by you forever. You can take my breath away. Would you swear that you'll always be mine? Or would you lie? Would you run and hide? Am I in too deep? Have I lost my mind? I don't care, you're here tonight. I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. I will stand by you. My mind. Well, I don't care, you're here tonight. I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. Oh, yeah. I will stand by you. Take my breath away.
Enrique Iglesias, whose father, of course, Julio, used to be a goalkeeper for Real Madrid. Hey-ho. ¶¶
catch another runner in the night, blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
So often, Dilbug, I think it's important to just use the internet and see what's being said out there by your co-hosts, your co-presenters, or indeed has been being said about the co-hosts and co-presenters. And I came across this fascinating insight from the wonderful world of fandom.com, which says Alan Stevens had the idea for an audio series loosely based on a film called Yojimbo by Akira Kurosawa. The film is about a samurai who plays two powerful families off against one another in order to benefit himself. Around this time, BBC Books published a Doctor Who novel titled Corpse Maker as part of its line of past Doctor adventures.
Corpse Marker.
Quite right.
That's wrong.
Yeah, well said. You see, well spotted. He can identify it straight away. Corpse Marker as part of its past line of past Doctor adventures, written by Chris Boucher. Yay! It served as a sequel to his 1977 Doctor Who story. Yay. The Robots of Death. Welcome, Alan Stevens, back to the Midweek Drive on what is a bit of a somber day. I mean, earlier this week, as I said earlier, we allowed David J. Howe and Sam Stone. We didn't allow them, actually. We wanted to make a point of it whilst we were at Great Yarmouth, the location of the upcoming Sci-Fi Weekender, to just have a few words in tribute to the late, great Terrence Dix. And it would be remiss of us not, given your Doctor Who scholarship status, for you to actually have a few words yourself with a gentleman who I was fortunate enough to host an interview in Lincoln a few years ago on a panel with Richard Franklin and Graham Harper. And I find him a very charming individual. We did a few phone links. He wasn't a major contributor to the programme, but he was very much an important part, certainly as far as the Midweek Drive was concerned. And your own thoughts, obviously, as somebody who was quite clearly probably one of the pillars on which the whole Doctor Who ethos was actually founded.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I actually arranged an interview with him on the phone with you once. Remember at a convention? Terence Dix spoke to you on that?
Yes, that's exactly so. He did that. We did do that. And yes, and of course, yeah, and I sort of missed it. I clearly actually sort of missed that. I know that he'd also been known as saying that he wished he'd had a Sam Stone to sort out his American convention appearances beforehand. But you're quite right, yes. Mm. And a name that, you know, Dilbarg in the studio, I'll just introduce you. I've got the fabulous Dilbarg, a level 2 to be a journalism student at the University of Lincoln, who's doing a short work placement with us. Very keen fan of Bollywood, Alan. Just wanted to say that. and really like David Tennant's Doctor Who, but after that, stop watching.
Well, I almost stopped watching while David Tennant was on, so...
Oh, you see?
Cancel each other out, I think.
You see, that's the woes. But Terence Dix, just dialing back, was somebody who I think, part of, I think, the notion of Doctor Who royalty, really, in the second wave with Barry Letts and so on. Alan, you're much better placed and focused to actually give us your own thoughts on Terence and how sadly, well, not sadly, let's celebrate. In fact, he's up there in another dimension, probably sort of saying, it was time to move on. Time, my dear, not a moment too soon.
Oh, that was a long intro, wasn't it? Goodness sake. Well, you had enough breath, really, after that one. Terence Dix, yeah, I've met Terence Dix on a number of occasions. I've interviewed him on a number of occasions. And he joined Doctor Who in 1968 when Derek Sherwin and Peter Bryant were script editor and producer. He was a sort of an assistant script editor. And then he kind of took over as a full-time script editor on the show from, I think it was 1969 onwards. Derek Sherwin left to work on another series, and Barry Letts, as a producer, took over. And Barry and him, Terence, got on very well, and they had a kind of lifelong friendship. And Terence worked on Doctor Who up until... as a script editor until 1974, and the last story he wrote, there was this kind of tradition he said he introduced where a leaving script editor would write the first story of the next season. And he wrote Robot, which was Tom Baker's introduction story. And he got on very well with Robert Holmes, and Robert Holmes employed him to write a number of Doctor Who stories during the 70s. And then he was brought back... because Barry Letts worked with John Nathan Turner, the producer, took over in 1980. He worked as an executive producer. He also sort of brought Terence in again. So Terence did a previous script he'd done, which was sort of dusted off, and called Stage of Decay. And he also wrote The Five Doctors, where John Pertwee and Patrick and Peter Davison came together and did a Doctor Who story. And also, the big thing that Terence Dix was that he wrote a lot of the novelizations of, I think probably the bulk of them. Target Books started in about 1973, and they started with reprints of three Doctor Who novelizations that had been produced in the 1960s, which was Doctor Who and the Daleks, Doctor Who and the Crusades, what was it, Crusaders, I think, and Doctor Who and the Zarbi. And then Terence Dix started writing them as well, and he started off. So sometimes the titles are different. So, for example, Spirit in Space, which was John Pertwee's very first story, that was rewritten, or that was novelized by Terence Dix as The Auton Invasion. And in fact, that's a very good book. In fact, a lot of his earlier books were very good. I think that sometimes the pressure of doing so many books, it became a bit... it's not true to say he's the type he said and she said, and then just send the script in. He did more work on that, but sometimes they got a bit thin in the late 70s. I remember some books, I think the novelization he did of Robots of Death is about 96 pages long and very large type. But, he did, and then I think when they did the BBC Adventures and all that stuff and Virgin Books, he contributed stories to that one as well. I think I read a few of them. But yeah, I mean, he wasn't, he wasn't there at the beginning of Doctor Who, and I think that his period of Doctor Who was, you know, it was stable, I'd say. It wasn't hugely innovative. Is that the right word? Innovative. But he by dint of his long period as a script editor of Barry Letts and also these Target books, you know, a lot of fans appreciate him because he kind of taught them to read, as it were.
Mm, exactly so. Long may he, his legacy continue. That's the important thing. Terence Dicks, 84 years of age, RIP these days. So it goes. I've even got a mention in the New York Times as Terence Dicks' anchor in the Doctor Who universe dies at 84. Okay, celebrate in all sorts of ways the positivity of that, and bear in mind that Celestial Toy Room is that must have featured lots of interviews with Terence Dicks, I would have thought, over the years, Alan. Celestial Toy Room, or was it relatively less inclined to do so?
Well, Celestial Toy Room has been running from 1976. I'm sure there's been more than one Terence Dicks interview in there,
Yeah, I would have thought so.
I mean,
so.
It's funny, isn't it? When you look at Doctor Who magazine, for example, they seem to be continually interviewing Peter Purvis. You know, eight or nine interviews they've done with Peter Purvis over the years, all of which I've read for this book I'm supposed to be writing, and all of which basically say the same sort of thing. So quite why they continually interview Peter Purvis, I don't know.
Perhaps they could have actually talked around more of his Blue Peter material. You know, that's the sort of time that's there. I mean, of course, he's never going to sort of reach the stage that Connie Huck has done, being the longest-serving Blue Peter presenter, but he's still been out those days.
Is she really?
Yeah, she is. Connie Huck, the longest-serving BBC presenter. So throw that out there as a piece of trivia that you might not have expected.
I remember a long time ago now, there was a convention called Space Mountain. So that was from 1994, and well, there was a number of them. I think there was three Space Mountains, and I remember there was one, and the organizers rang up and said, and they were talking about guests and stuff, and I knew quite a few people. I had Terence Dicks' telephone number at the time. I think I got off Adrian Riggleford. Anyway, it was sort of short notice. I think they had a guest drop out or whatever, and I said, well, I'll give Terence Dicks a call. And I rang up Terence Dicks and said, hello, Terence, for this convention taking place in Clacton, could you come along? There's no money, but they would pay your expenses and stuff and food and things. And he said, when is it? And I said, it's Sunday. You know, this is coming Sunday, and I was calling on Thursday. And he said, yeah, all right. Do you want Barry as well? Hmm. And I said, yeah, if you could get him. Anyway, he got on the coach and came down to Clacton, you know, from London, and or wherever it was he was living at the time, and did this interview with Barry Letts and myself, which was really quite good of him. And I remember him thinking, I remember him saying something like, just think, God, I was on the bus this morning on Sunday morning going to convention to Clacton, and he did it, and it was very, very good of him. And also a number of times when Alistair Locke was invited to a library up in Manchester. He was doing an event at the time, or convention in Manchester, I think, I can't remember what the convention was called, but he asked if I'd like to go along as well, and he brought his Dalek along. And Terence Dicks was there, and Terence Dicks was supposed to be doing some sort of presentation to these kids. And of course, the Dalek turned up, and the kids just all loved the Dalek and stuff. And I remember saying to him, oh dear, you didn't get to do your presentation. He said, well, it's fine. Yeah, I was saved by a Dalek, but that's perfectly fine. The Dalek's far more interested than me. And so I was kind of, again, he didn't really have a kind of ego side to him, which I think was very much in his favour, because some people kind of could have got a bit stroppy about that.
The challenges of the ego can be very problematic, Alan, as we know.
Yeah, so he was good about that. So, he was a nice natured bloke. Do you mean?
Yep. No, I find him, as I say, in the times I've interviewed him, and certainly the biggest event was this thing, as I mentioned, where we had it was part of a Lincoln Book Festival, at the Drill Hall, with Terence Graham and Richard Franklin. It was fascinating. But
Terence Graham and Richard Franklin.
Yes.
Graham Harper.
Graham Harper, quite right.
Yeah.
BAFTA award winning Graham Harper.
Who's
this
Terence Graham
guy? Show. Exactly. Yes. Well spotted. Okay, Dealbag is not quite glazed over at present, but I know I got a sense of feeling because I had a teacher for a module last year, Introduction to Journalism Wonderful. He said, What things are, has this got anything to do with my interest in Bollywood history or indeed general film? You know, it's lying entirely. But I do have a little quiz for you. Before we go start talking about Celestial Toy Room, if I can get the words out and the current edition and so on, I'm going to give you a little test. Now, it's not going to be the Guess the Theme TV tunes, basically. We did that last time, and that was hugely successful-ish. So this is one where, basically, I'm fairly certain Dealbag will be able to identify pretty much straight away, but you might need the full 2 minutes, Alan. So are you ready for this particular motion picture theme? And your task, as ever, is to actually identify what it is and where it's come from.
You're going to play one theme to me, yeah?
Just one theme, that's all. Just one theme, starting now. Have you managed to identify this successfully? You still feel as though you're in the right ballpark?
Oh, sorry, I was nodding off there.
Oh, dear. So do I. Dilberg, any thoughts?
You've lost me completely.
Oh, dear.
It sounds like a superhero film.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't watch superhero films, so it's probably Avengers or something, isn't it?
No. But, Dilberg...
But it's Batman.
It is not Batman, no.
Is it Iron Man?
No, it's not Iron Man.
Ant-Man?
Would you like to confirm that? Are you staying with that?
Yes.
You're saying Ant-Man? What's the response of Mr. Computer? Is Dalbag right? Is it Ant-Man? A little bit worried there, Alan, because she was claiming she had no idea whatsoever.
When she said Ant-Man, I thought, actually, there is that. I have actually seen Ant-Man, so I should have known that. But,
exactly.
You know, it's didn't say Ant, though, did it? I swear, and, because remember... Like, there was a guy who said to put if you wrote a theme to Dracula, he would put the name, you know, into the music. Dracula, dun da 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 da, you know, so Dracula. So it's not like and.
There's kind of that. I mean, and obviously not to be confused with.
A new rock family of wild nobility.
Family,
exactly. Yes, exactly. You know, these are the sort of critical things.
That's my time, see. That's my time.
Yeah, and a worthy time it was, because I think it's fair to say, I mean, Dilberg, do you have any recollection whatsoever of?
Not a clue.
Sadly.
You know, Shilpa Shetty, wasn't it?
Shilpa Shetty.
Shilpa Shetty, that's it. Yeah, Shilpa Shetty. She's a famous Bollywood actress, isn't she?
Yeah.
There we are. But even Shilpa hasn't as yet produced. That's what you called
Misha. I don't know, it's pretty wild in the Big Brother, so when she was there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a strange new world.
I'm not quite sure nobility was the word I was used for. What's her name now? Jade, wasn't it? She's dead now.
Yeah, they had some... It was on Big Brother, wasn't it, number 3?
I don't know what number it was, but there was a documentary on Jade a few weeks back, actually, and about that. What's her name again?
Shilpa Shetty.
Shilpa Shetty. Thank you very much. Shilpa Shetty appeared. Oh, yeah, I remember Shilpa Shetty, yeah. Huh.
And that's what actually builds relationships, builds bridges across the generations.
Builds.
Yeah, like some magical thing. CT. Yeah. As it is affectionately known, is the longest-running Doctor Who fanzine in the world.
Yeah.
In the world, the longest-running Doctor Who fanzine in the world, first edition having been published by the Society. When do you think, actually? Alan, it's not you. When do you think, Dilbag, the first edition of Celestial Toy Room first emerged? Give me a year.
19... 74.
Whoa, frighteningly close, 1976.
Oh.
Frighteningly close, guys. Yeah.
2 years, that's, I mean, you know, that's...
Yeah, I said it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's extraordinary. And
issue 500 comes out in December.
Exactly, issue 500, and we're already anticipating that, but let's not count our chickens, because clearly the Dalek-themed scenario that's been the wraparound cover of the latest edition is wonderful. A monthly generated Doctor Who newsletter, of which you are the current incumbent of celebrity guest editor. Or whatever title you'd like to give yourself.
I don't know what editor. It used to be called guest editor, and when I was speaking to the last time, I said, well, they said it wasn't guest editor anymore, it was all like normal editor. I said, well, I don't do every issue, do I? I do 4 issues a year, one of them which is a double issue, so that counts as 4 issues.
Although, technically, Alan, you could say that when you have celebrity guest editors, like, for instance, Sophie Aldred edits Doctor Who Monthly, for instance, you know, there's lots of photographs of her basically posing with the magazine and so on, and it's a sort of standard line that's there. So, I've yet to see the fantastic cheesy shot of your good self, Alan, holding up a copy of Celestial Toy Room, or looking meaningfully and longingly at a layout of the actual magazine.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably to make everyone believe that she's editing it, whereas I do edit.
What? You're saying it's just celebrity flim-flam waffle that's there?
I think so, yeah, actually.
Lord. Yeah. Once again, Southside Broadcasting shattering those preconceptions about celebrity editors on a Saturday morning.
I wonder if Sophie Aldred, when she first started playing played Ace back in Doctor Who,
mm-hmm.
that she thought, you know, that...
30-odd years later.
All these years later, she'd still be playing a 16-year-old. I mean, it's a hell of a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's, you can't, if you're in the acting profession, you shouldn't knock success. At least she's remembered for that. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Take that, Nicola Bryant. Anyway.
That's right. Nicola Bryant, I felt sorry for Nicola Bryant, because I think she's on Celebrity Pointless recently, and she was saying how she wasn't an American.
No.
And yet she was told to pretend she was American.
Yes.
And she had to find ways of sort of not lying, but still indicate that she was American.
There are academics who have to actually put on a false southern accent when they're actually teaching in an East Midlands university, as opposed to claiming they're from Middlesbrough. It just happens. I mean, you know, these students as well, from that point of view. I mean,
that's interesting. I was told from someone recently about Joe Swinson, you know, the Dem leader, and how... You know,
Boris's favourite.
How her voice is kind of like really kind of weird. Hmm. And they said, well, she's Scottish, but the thing is, often you get a situation where... They try and, you know, when they come down, if they try and pretend to be, Southern. And he says that
Michael
Gove, actually, when he's in Scotland, talks with a Scottish accent, and when he's in Britain, talks with an English accent. But Michael Gove is actually better at doing the accent than Swinson is, who sort of varies backwards and forwards. I think sometimes she says that she comes to the Forest of Dean, where she's trying to get, you know, sort of like correct the vowels, as it were.
Which is West Country, Dalebag, in case you're wondering, the Forest of Dean. It's way over there. It's almost a strange world indeed. It's where Alan is currently based, which is rightly so. So why, Alan, should Dilberg get hold of a copy or subscribe in some way, shape or form, access Celestial Toy Room, even though, by her own admission, she was more of a David Tennant fan, and I don't think David Tennant appears at all in the current edition.
I don't think she should bother.
Okay, well, for Doctor Who fans then, and appreciators of the wholesale system, what are the highlights of the current issue?
Well, there are articles I quite like. I like my article, which is basically goes back to Terranation's second script, The Dalek Invasion of Earth, and goes through it, because there's not a lot of first draft scripts available. What BBC would do, they would usually burn them, I think, and they only keep camera scripts. But the fact is, there are a very small number of first draft scripts still left, and three of them belong to Terranation. One of them is The Dalek Invasion of Earth, the other one is The Chase, and the third one is the first 6 episodes Terranation wrote of The Dalek's Master Plan. It's fascinating going back in and looking what he originally intended in what appears on the screen, because what he originally intended was a far tougher and more disturbing storyline than, you know, than what finally appears. And although, you know, obviously edges have been smoothed out and stuff, there seems to be like the content has been, sanitized a little when it appeared on TV, which is a shame. Well, I suppose it would scare people to death if he can't be of Nation's original version. But this is basically goes through Nation's original version, points out some of the differences, but also the underlying themes of what Nation was trying to achieve, which were kind of blunted And the other article, which I very much like, is an article by Jez Strickley, which goes through Stephen Moffat's era of Doctor Who, pointing out how he's continually killing Doctor Who companions and then bringing them back again and doing it over and over and over and over again to the point we were basically sick of it. So that was that's a good article, I think. We put a lot of work into that
one. He's simply saying death might not be a final division. You know, Terence Dix might come back in another incarnation in the very near future.
Well, he might, yeah.
I think he may not.
That undermines drama, doesn't it? Oh, look, he's dead. Oh, my God, he's dead. She's dead. Oh, no, she's back again. Oh, she's dead again. Oh, hang on, she's back again. I mean, it's the kind of way you get you can get a formula. I was pointing at someone, in fact, the same guy, writer actually, a possible future article about Cybermen. You know, how whenever the Cybermen turn up, they're always on the point of extinction. You know, and also they're a weak force in that they, instead of just going in and blasting everything, they infiltrate and all this stuff because they don't have the manpower or the capacity to take over these bases, and so they come up with these elaborate plans. And it's always, it all derives from the first story, of course, where effectively the Cybermen are rendered extinct by the end of their planet blowing up. But it becomes these formula which make up a Cyberman story, and then, whenever a Cyberman story comes back, they're always in that same kind of same position, in Revenge of Cybermen or Moonbase or Tomb of Cybermen. They're always on the point of extinction. And I think that the trouble is that although that kind of works when you've got other stories, in the mix, and the Cyberman story comes along every 2 or 3 years or whatever, that's okay. But if you've got, if you had the same, every story was a Cyberman story, and it's the same thing appearing every story, you'd be sick of it. And that's basically what happened with Moffat. He had these ideas, which were very good when salted into the rest of the RTD era. They were probably the highlights of the RTD era. And then he becomes showrunner, and
Blink.
These elements become the theme. If you say that again, I'll hang up. become the theme of his seasons, So with Blink, for example, in various other stories.
Are you my mummy?
There's what?
Are you my mummy?
There were various ideas concerning time paradoxes and all this. And he does that to death, doesn't he?
Okay, let's just hold it there momentarily, Alan. And Dilbag, do you care one iota? Or is it a case of, actually, Alan's got a point. This is the reason I stopped watching Doctor Who.
The latter.
That's the whole thing. A snort, a derisory snort in a kind of almost Jacob Rees-Mogg-like way.
Well, she stopped watching Doctor Who because David Tennant stopped being a doctor.
Mm. No, I stopped watching after Donna left.
All right.
Well, that was basically the end of the David Tennant era, wasn't it?
Well, you got me there.
Okay, next little challenge for you, Alan, is, again, wearing your musical producer's hat, because I know you're good at this, choice of two, and it's up to your good self to open this up for Dilbag, because it's going to be opening up her musical knowledge. Two choices, both by Stuart Goddard, otherwise known as Adam, from Adam and the Ants. Never heard of them? No. Shaking of heads. We can offer you, and it's going to be determined by Alan, the aforementioned Kings of the Wild Frontier or Prince Charming. Where are you going to go, Alan? Prince Charming or Kings of the Wild Frontier?
I think we'll go with Prince Charming. I'm a bit sick of F was Wild Kings, was it? Something of the Wild
Kings
Frontier.
Of the Wild Frontier.
Kings of the Wild Frontier.
So Prince Charming, possibly the mega number that you might use. Maybe say the Duchess of Cambridge might be sort of looking at this. Maybe it's got no relevance whatsoever to the current state of the monarchy in the British Isles, unless, of course, you're referring to Princess Carrie of Downing Street.
Don't you ever stop being
The Dominic Cumming theme there for Westminster parliamentarians across the globe. Or maybe.
That ending's a bit repetitive, isn't it?
Ridicule is nothing to be scared of, Prince Charming. Prince Charming, ridicule is nothing to be scared of. I mean, that's what you call crafting the word, Dilbag. I mean, yeah, that's as a journalist, you know, that's the sort of thing you'd really want to bring that out there.
Well, when I hear that song, I think of Diana Dawes. I don't think of this guy Cumming.
There you are.
Well, I don't know, but of course, he could like Diana Dawes, so...
I have suggested, of course, that it could replace Jerusalem as the University of Lincoln's graduation ceremony. It would go down very well in the cathedral, but sadly, our Vice-Chancellor hasn't really got back to me in a positive way as yet. Oh, yeah, wait and see.
So, did you like the postcard?
It was awesome. It's a free postcard.
Yeah, J.L. Fletcher, a very good artist, yes. J.L. Fletcher. He's done a series of he's done four postcards now. I was discussing with him yesterday, he's doing a fifth one, actually.
Mm.
Yeah.
This is a postcard that you get free, as a free gift, without it being stuck in a plastic bag, etc., in the envelope of your celestial toy room.
Well, that's I'll be
right.
getting a copy.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't come with every issue.
No. But it's all very good. Dilbag, any questions you'd like to put to Alan about life, the universe, the Forest of Dean? Anything, really. I mean, he's got a view on so many things. He's almost like a polymath of the forest. In fact, I've often thought of referring to as a POF, you know, polymath of the forest. POTF, really. Anyway, carry on.
I wasn't very good at maths, actually.
Mm. See what he did there? Very good. I didn't rise to it because I thought, I'm giving time for Dilbag to formulate a question. I think
or
he might have one now. Exactly.
I've got a basic question. When did you actually get into Doctor Who? Mm. At what age?
Yes.
Oh, about three.
Three.
You see, so when your parents were stopping you from watching Big Brother with Shilpa Shetty, Alan, you know, in a previous generation, previous incarnation, was locking into William Hartnell and Patrick.
God, I was just locking into William Hartnell, not that old.
Really?
Really?
Really? Really?
Look,
yeah. I thought you regenerated at least twice, Alan. Really?
No, I'm not on any regeneration.
Oh.
We'll see what happens when I... pass on.
Okay.
But no, I am probably 1971. I first saw. I was at a friend
it's
of mine.
Ancient history, isn't it, Dalbach?
Before my mother was born.
Before her mother was born.
Yeah, I was about. Oh, how old was I? I must have been. Well, hang on. Let's risk 70, 71. Mm-hmm. I was at five, and I was at a friend of my mother's called Joan Hale with her son called Mark Hale. And I don't know why I was there. Probably my parents had gone somewhere and you were, you know, looking after me for a short while. And they switched a chat TV on, and John Pertwee appeared on screen running across a field. And I seem to remember him being chased by a dinosaur, but I think that was just a sort of false memory.
That was definitely a false memory, because the dinosaur field chasing was very much... unless, of course, you encounter the one where he was with Joe Grant in that kind of minuscule world, the circus.
It was 1971, so it was like 2 years before that.
Invasion
of
dinosaurs.
I think what happened was I saw... It was Doctor Who and the Silurians, and that features Moors... and also a not particularly convincing dinosaur, Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Although the Silurians were kind of dinosaur in nature.
Yeah, but I didn't see any of them. I'll tell you what I saw, or what I remember seeing. I remember seeing the Doctor being chased by a dinosaur across the moorlands, but that was a false memory. I think I was, in my mind, I was pushing together the scene of a Tyrannosaurus Rex in the tunnel and a scene, you know, on moorland, which both do appear in that story. Of course, many years later, there's a story called, about 5 years later, there's a story called Terror of the Zygons, which did feature the Doctor being chased across moorland by a Loch Ness monster.
Exactly, Loch Ness monsters, of course, who were looked after by the Zygons, until, of course, they came back and were repeatedly brought back in recent era Doctor Who.
And ruined, yeah. So, you know, it's a strange thing, isn't it? But when what was the first time I properly saw it? I remember there was an uncle of mine, a guy called Jim, he married my father's mother, so he's called Uncle Jim. But he was a fan of Doctor Who, and we used to stop off at Gloucester when we used to drive back home to Cinderford every Saturday, and we go in, and he usually have Doctor Who on, and I remember there was, my memory is from Colin Space, when one of the IMC men gets out of his sort of strange car, and a primitive on this planet, alien primitive, comes out of a door, and this guy punches him in the face and goes in with Joe Grant. And I remember the primitive then got up again, and my father was saying, oh, didn't hit him hard enough, which is interesting.
Yeah, these days that would have been politically incorrect and obviously sort of frowned upon.
Hit him harder, he wouldn't get up. So that was my second memory of it. And then I think I saw little bits of season 10. I remember our TV had packed up, and a guy came around to repair it. Back then, you see, if your television packs up, you throw it out and get a new television. But back in the old days, there was someone called a TV repairman, and he would come around and fix your television. And we had a black and white TV, and he came and fixed it, and the screen came on, and it was episode 3 of Planet of the Daleks. So that was another memory of mine.
Happy days.
I didn't actually sit down and sort of say, I'm going to watch this program until, the Tom Baker era began with Robot. I sat there and thought, I'm going to watch this program.
I
couldn't tell the time, so I started sat there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and just sat there for about 4 hours.
He's watching The Sport, watching Grandstand, watching all the other bits and pieces.
I was watching BBC Two, actually. It was usually a good film.
Oh, there we are.
I
would have thought you might have been watching World of Sport and Wrestling, actually. You struck me as that.
Well, I always thought, guy, Dicky Davis, he looked like a demented badger, didn't he? Remember
he taught me a lot of my broadcasting technique, I'll have you know. Shadowing Dicky Davis and Harry Carpenter, maybe the broadcaster I am today.
Explains a lot. You should put a big streak in your hair. Oh, no, you haven't got any hair, have you? Sorry. Is he still alive, Dicky Davis?
Yes, just about. But anyway, life continues.
Must be getting on, mustn't he? Remember I used to watch a wrestling.
So is Nicholas Parsons, you know, but we keep going. That's the important thing. Dillbag, at this time, I normally put two questions to people, which, as it's your first ever show, you won't know. So prepare for this when actually you resume duties. Not necessarily for Fly Me to the Moon, but when you're back here with us in Lincoln, and you join us hopefully on the Midweek Drive. Am I actually saying that? I mean, have you enjoyed the last 90 minutes or so that you've been with us on
the Yes, it's been really fun.
Is it worthwhile making that telephone call?
Yeah.
And having the shock of realizing that the person at the other end of the line was your tutor from the university in a whole different incarnation and in the Northeast as opposed to being in Lincoln. No, it's frightening.
I have no idea what this means at all.
Well, you listen to the early part of the program, Alan, and you'll find out.
I was asleep.
I'll give you the sort of snapshot. You know, the running order is basically Dillbag, student looking for work placement, phones up Southside Broadcasting.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that Southside Broadcasting has a deep connection through myself with the University of Lincoln. Whoosh, she's in the studio, like the Royal Road.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because you do two radio things, don't you?
Radio stations. Sometimes even three, but let's not go there. You know, talk about BBC Humberside and my contributions there. That's the line of time. Yeah.
Never a voice on that one.
Alan, sometimes getting through the BBC routines hasn't changed, you know? I mean, you've got so many things to work through. And on an evening or a weekend when we're celebrating 50 years of Monty Python, marvellous, where can we actually go? Apart from saying, Alan Stevens, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes.
And will you be returning very soon?
Yeah, we're doing another CT in March.
That's Celestial Toy Room.
So see you then.
Is that going to be the Christmas edition? That's going to be
It comes out in March, isn't it?
It's post Jodie Whittaker's resumption of duties as the
probably post Jodie Whittaker, to think way things are going at the moment on the show.
Yeah, but you know, we'll keep on supporting her because at the end of the day, she's from Yorkshire.
Post Chibnall, I think will be. Where is he from? Hull, I think.
I think you might have said Hull there, but perhaps got confused with the area where it is.
Hull event, yeah.
So it goes. Alan Stevens, Celestial Timer is there. We will speak again soon. Keep on keeping on, and bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Our life together is so precious. Together
we have grown. We have grown. Although our love is still special, let's take a chance and fly away somewhere alone. It's been too long since we took the time. No one's to blame. I know time flies so quickly. Like we